Okay, so another thing about St. Paul, and he talks about this fact that he becomes all things to all men that he might save some. Again, think what it would have been like to be a Pharisee of the Pharisees who can't even go into the house of a Gentile. I mean, not just a Pharisee of Pharisees, any upstanding Jew could never do that. And then to live with them. So he does that. He becomes like a Gentile to the Gentiles because he's full of the love of God. And one thing, as I was reading through this, you know, something that really struck me that I never really saw before, you know, was how much he really, really, truly loved his own people. You know, as you read through, you know, it always, you know, as he's on his missionary journeys, he goes first to the synagogue. And then they, at some point, either very soon or after a while, they reject him. And then he says, you know, I had to come to you first, and now I'm going to the Gentiles. And I think I always sort of read that like, okay, this is the pro forma. This is what I was told to do. I have to come to the Jews until they reject the message, and then I go to the Gentiles. But not at all. Yeah, you know, he stayed as long as they would let him stay. And he had hard words for them. But they're the hard words not of somebody who's disgusted with his people, but they're the hard words like of a father who is devastated to see how misguided his children are. And he would just die for them if they would let him. You know, if there would be some way that he could die for them that would be of any help, he would do it. And he talks about that in Romans chapter 9, you know, when he's willing to be cast away from Christ, which basically, what is that? Damnation. He'd be willing to be damned for them. And so going back to the powers of the soul, one of the things that we see about Paul is that his insensitive power, his angering power, was in proper relation to his nous. He got angry, but after he's a Christian, the various times where you see him angry, he's angry for the right reason. You know, he's angry that people are walking away from life and love, because he cares about them. You know, there's the story about the Athenian gods, right, where he's walking around in Athos and he's getting more and more and more angry as he sees these people following these false gods. So what does he do? He doesn't get up there and say, you know, you bunch of pagan fools, you're all going to hell unless you accept Jesus. Now what he does is he says, I perceive that you are a very religious people. And, you know, and I'm going around and I'm seeing all these different shrines, and I saw one to an unknown god. And him whom you proclaim in ignorance, whom you worship in ignorance, I'm come to proclaim to you. That is no way a direct quote, but that's the basic idea. So he used his anger well, and he wasn't, anger was not in charge of the chariot. That horse wasn't running the chariot all over the place. He was using his horses wisely because he desired for all to come to Christ, and he used his anger for that purpose. Okay, so the difference between what Paul does when he says that he becomes all things to all men that he might save some, and what you would call man-pleasing, is the motivation. Again, it's like, where is my noose trying to drive? You know, am I trying to get to a place where everyone's happy with me, or at least nobody's fighting with me, or everybody thinks I'm the smartest person in the world, or whatever? Or am I trying to get to God and therefore going through the cross, because that's how you get there? So for Paul, when he is becoming all things to all men that he might save some, his motivation is love of Christ, who identifies himself with his body. So he wants everybody to be part of the body of Christ, because that's Christ's desire. If we are man-pleasers, you know, our motivations can be impressing people, avoiding unpleasantness, or whatever, as I was mentioning a bit earlier. So a question we can ask ourselves, you know, is what are we holding on to? What is it that we're driving towards that's keeping us from allowing God to express his love to the people around us? Okay. The next thing I wanted to look at in the life of St. Paul is this very long road to Rome. And in a way, his road to Rome starts on the day that he becomes a Christian. He doesn't know that that's where he's going at that point, but he knows he's going to suffer much. So he knows, like, sort of the general idea of what the road is, but the details of it, you know, it's like looking at Google Maps, and it's like, okay, I've got, you know, 500 miles to go from here to there, but I don't see all the little, you know, twists and turns and things that are going to happen on that road. So but he does, as he's going on this journey, he gets a clearer and a clearer picture of what's going on. So there's these confirmatory prophecies that tell him that he's going to be suffering, that he's going to be in chains. And remember, so what happens when he's told that he's going to be, that if he goes to Jerusalem, he's going to be in chains and suffer? What do the people want him to do? They want him to not go. And what does he say? Yeah, he says something like, what do you mean by breaking my heart? You know, I'm ready not only to be in chains for Christ, but to die for Christ. So then they realize, okay, this is God's will. So they allow, you know, they don't keep bothering him about it anymore. So he goes. And so then he meets with James and the elders, who are probably, you know, the other apostles and other elders, I assume. And do you remember what there was a concern about in that meeting? Okay, yeah, this was actually a little bit after that particular one, I believe. But it all still was related to the whole question about Jews and Gentiles. And, you know, do you have to become a Jew to become a Christian? And so by this time he has gone and, you know, Peter and Paul have talked to James and the elders, and they've had that big council in Acts 15, and he's accepted that, yes, this is correct, that you do not have to become a Jew to be a Christian, and, you know, they have a blessing to continue the way they're going. But there were still people who were very upset about this, and there are people who think that, well, now Paul is going around and just bringing Gentiles into the temple. And so they want him to do something to calm the fears of the people. Do you remember what it was? Okay, he was going to the temple to fulfill a vow. Remember that? That was part of why he was heading back to Jerusalem. And so they wanted him, like, okay, fine, go ahead, do that. And while you're doing it, take these other four men who also want to fulfill some vows, and you pay for them. And so by doing that, that was thought like, okay, that's going to calm the waters. Did it? Okay, it actually had the opposite effect, because he goes in there and they assume that he has brought a Gentile into the temple, which he actually had not done. And so then that sort of starts the ball rolling, in a sense, of, you know, the city goes in uproar, you know, and then so he gets taken. And interestingly, the Roman centurions almost pretty consistently tend to be the best behaving people in the stories. You know, they're just trying to keep the cities in control, and many times they're actually quite kind to Paul. So here he is, and they're doing what they thought was going to have a certain effect. It has the opposite effect. And then he appeals to Caesar. And there's much that I'm missing here that I'm not going into detail on. And if he had not appealed to Caesar, what would have happened? Most probably, Festus, what did he say? You know, if he hadn't appealed to Caesar, I could have what? I could have let him go. But because he had appealed to Caesar, he has to go to Rome. So he goes to Rome, and he's there for a little while, and, you know, preaching in peace, and then later he is martyred. So I think for us, you know, we shouldn't assume that our definition of this didn't work out very well is God's definition. Because as far as we know, James and the elders were in good faith saying, go ahead and do this, and we think this is going to calm everything. And these were, you know, the leaders of the church. So even the leaders of the church don't always know everything that's going to concern the church. But God does. So, you know, what looks bad in the short term is the beginning of this glorious finish of the life of Paul. But there's a question of, you know, why does something look bad to us as opposed to good? You know, why is it that when we see, you know, that Paul appeals to Caesar and he ends up having to go to Rome instead of just being able to be free and go on his missionary journeys wherever he would have gone next, why does that look bad to us? And again, it's like, where is the charioteer trying to drive? You know, if my goal is physical safety, then if I'm Paul, I made some really serious mistakes along the way. But if my goal is to be with Christ, and to be with Christ is to be crucified with Christ, then he's right on track. So, in the book of Acts, you know, that ends before Paul's martyrdom, but we do know that he was martyred in Rome. Some of the accounts say that he was martyred at the same time as Peter. Others say it was a year apart, but it was the same day. But whether or not they actually physically died together, they seal their apostleship together in the sense of they're both ending their apostleship and their lives with this great act of self-giving love. And so to finish up talking about St. Paul and love never fails, yes, love never fails, but it takes some rather amazing roads to victory, and it can only gain victory through martyrdom.